Boys Lunch.
Here we go.
That was the sound of a Boys Lunch mug being sipped out of by Mr. Paul.
Good to be back.
This is Boys Lunch, two Catholic teachers talking about life, and we are back on the microphone on this glorious Thursday.
Yes, every Monday, getting these things, every Monday-ish, getting these things out. Heard a couple complaints recently. Where's the new podcast? First, very happy that everyone is interested in our next podcast. Second, I'm pretty sure the description says Monday-ish.
Yeah, so get your facts straight.
Also, just want to make sure everybody knows that they can follow us at Boys Lunch Podcast on Instagram and email the podcast at boyslunch1@gmail.com.
Now, normally it's my fault that we're a little late. I think this week
it's me.
That's falling more on you. This is weird.
It is definitely me.
The dynamic is weird. Because normally you're like anytime, anywhere, you're like, yeah, sure, let's do it.
Yeah, let's do it. What was Monday and Tuesday?
You had to practice finals. It's because your job.
Oh, yeah. That's what it was.
You weren't like avoiding it.
Yeah,
like,
sitting in a cafeteria watching seniors take finals. It was good though. It's been a nice week, you know, seniors on their way out, did some graduation practice yesterday. Favorite day of the entire school year is when Central Catholic seniors put on a Special Olympics event for Unit 5 kids. Yeah, that was a blast. Loved that day. So seniors did a wonderful job. Got to see some great students. Trying to think what else has happened since then.
I feel like we both had some eventful weekends, right?
Yeah. Can't wait to hear more.
So yeah, we'll let you know next time what happened. Yeah. We went to my grandma's in town, so we got to see her. She lives in North Carolina, so it was nice. She's still here. She kind of comes and stays for a couple weeks, so it's nice to catch up with her. Went to the farmer's market, went to the Third Sunday market.
Big market guy.
Went to Sports Clips, the most important thing.
You're an hour and a half wait at Sports Clips.
Yeah, I don't want to talk about that. Yeah, I don't want to talk about it.
Hey, how's that grass doing?
Yeah, it's coming.
It's coming up.
Yeah.
It's going to make it.
The ground got pretty dry, so it was all cracked up. And so my dad was like, just throw some seed in the cracks. So I threw some more seed down into the cracks. It was good. We went to Owen's nursery, got some plants, and I got my veggies again. I'm excited about growing some peppers and
that garden's coming
tomatoes.
Alive.
So yeah, I got to do a little bit more outside. Went to Flingers for dinner. That was fun. Nice. Epiphany roped us into that. They give you those.
Oh, yeah.
Certificates for reading, but you have to go in and eat, which is kind of inconvenient, but I get what they're doing.
Guess every time.
So yeah, we had a good weekend.
Nice.
A little stressful points, just our three-nager, am I right? But
what, them running around an open air market, just
yeah,
grabbing and touching everything they're not supposed to.
It was like I got to see a snapshot of the highs and lows of what summer will be.
Yeah.
Like a lot of good, like cool family time and activities to do out of the house, but also just the stress of like corralling a three-year-old. So it's going to be great.
Yeah.
Did that give you enough time to jog your memory on your great weekend?
Absolutely. Yeah, we got our garden planted as well. Some tomatoes, peppers, got some zucchini.
Okay, so you have more. You have zucchini.
Yeah. And then, we just kind of had a nice family weekend. Mary, unfortunately, was ill over Mother's Day weekend. So we got to go out to eat on Saturday. And then Mary and I went over to the that new place.
The stable.
The stable? No, Friday night.
Casper.
Yeah, went over there.
Was it Casper?
Yeah, it was Casper. Right, okay. Had a good time. Girls got to run around. They got to experience golf for the first time. So it was just like, because it sits out and looks over that first hole. Like,
beautiful.
There's like a woman that was going to play. It's like, oh, Zaylee, watch. It's just no idea what to expect or what's happening. Like trying to describe it. It's just like, well, she's going to take a ball out. And in these club,
she's gonna hit it way over there and try to get it to tiny little.
Oh, I felt so bad. You know, like you got those first, well, any of them. There was a group of gentlemen that came through. Every single one of them just like topped it into the tall grass, like 20 feet over. We didn't see a single good shot.
That's what happened when I went with you and Kevin. Yeah. My like first like hole or two, just like worm burners, like over and over again.
You just got those first hole jitters. Now that they've got that. Casper's right there. You've got an entire patio filled with people that are just facing out on the hole.
That's like, really good for people watching. But
oh yeah, and it's hilarious. Like you know, nobody on the patio actually cares, or you know, cares if you're good at golf or not. And it's a 9-hole par 3, so it's like people are just out there to practice.
Every time I go in golf, I haven't swung like a club in 3 years, so it's I just go in like cold. I don't even really do practice swings.
Are you like me where I feel overly confident? I'm like, this is just like riding a bike.
And I don't.
You don't? Okay.
When I went with Kevin last summer, when I went and visited him, right after I hit my first shot, I think I just knew in his head, he's like, oh, this is going to be a long day.
I'm going to have to watch this for 18 holes.
By hole two, I was a lot better. But I think he was like, I immediately regret this.
But good tip, though. If you're having one of those rounds, just move quickly. Just, nobody needs to be taking 12 practice swings just to watch you put it into the lake.
I am good at that.
That's good.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I won't do a lot of – I'll just hit and then just kind of run after it, hit it again. Yeah. Can't wait for golf season to start, man.
Oh, yeah. You're a big golfer.
The one time.
It shows. Yeah. Got to play some hockey this morning with an alumnus, Teddy Johnson, this morning. Got to see Frank Gallucci absolutely embarrass him. It was phenomenal. So
sorry,
Teddy,
I just caught up on your proper conjugation of Latin. Yeah, conjugation.
You know I love my Latin.
Frank Gallucci embarrassed him?
Yeah, it was great. No. So Teddy brought the puck out from behind the net. Frank just absolutely just took it away from him behind him and then scored.
He didn't check him, right?
No.
He brought a lot of check in that league. Okay, good.
Teddy, I'm sorry.
I thought he just laid him out on the ice. Wow.
Frank, he's just a child. Frank had himself a game this
Teddy,
morning.
Teddy, were you a little rusty? I mean, what's going on?
Seriously, I don't know what
you
don't
have a rink out of college? Frank lives for those moments, probably.
Well, I was like, Frank, he's just a child. And I said, I'm going to have to tell his dad. And Frank goes, oh, I'm going to tell his dad. That's so Teddy, Teddy played phenomenal. He's probably the best guy out there, one of them. Whoa. So it's like, it's good to have that humbling moment. And it was great for me to watch.
That's pretty humble of you to say that. I mean, we all know you're the best.
Because I had a moment this morning. You ever had I don't know what sports you've played. You've played so many. You're just a star athlete. But I was taking the puck up and someone slapped their stick like it was one of my teammates behind me.
Oh.
And I fell for that like classic, like, I'm open.
Oh,
and
no.
You pass it to the other team. So I had one of those moments this morning where I just like a back pass and like, thank you.
Oh, okay. No.
So it's not like I didn't have my moments out there. But
hey, who would you compare your game to?
My game to?
Yeah, if you're talking about like hockey players.
Oh, yeah.
Who do you compare your game to?
See here. So Mario Lemieux, Wayne Gretzky. I'm that fourth liner that nobody knows about.
But it's putting in important minutes.
Putting in the hard work. Occasionally gets a goal, and they're like, oh, yeah, they can do that.
I guess I shouldn't say important minutes because hockey players go out for like 10 seconds. And then... yes. Too many line changes, dude. You can't be that tired. They're professional athletes.
I mean, you skate for 90 seconds really hard.
They're professional athletes. That's what makes me – I don't know.
Duncan Keith's playing like 33 minutes a game, or at least he was at the peak of
his. Is that what it is? How many minutes are in a game? Like 60?
60.
Okay. Oh, my goodness.
You skate really hard for
– they're getting paid millions of dollars, all right?
Okay? Don't get me riled up.
You're supposed to be
– do your job.
Yeah, do your job. Right, skate thanks, for more thanks. Than a minute at a time, okay? Jeez. Players are the laziest players on the planet.
It's from the guy whose hockey knowledge is ESPN updates that you just feed me.
I don't even look at those, man. I don't even look at those.
Well, so the only ones that are forced.
It's my knowledge is just turning it on and seeing them change after a minute. Be like, what are you doing? Stay out on the ice. If you're Patrick King, you're apparently the greatest player ever. Stay out there, Patrick.
Oh, yeah, but football players are real hard 4 seconds at a time, okay?
But that burst.
not what you came here for, though. Any other updates for people?
No. Oh, I did find a baby bunny carcass on our front porch today.
Nice.
Yeah.
Neighborhood cat, just a little gift.
I don't know, man. I don't know what got it, but it did decapitate it. So,
must be that time of year. I don't know what time of year I'm talking about, but we had a baby bird right in the middle of our driveway.
What's going on?
I don't know. And all our, I don't know, the cats or
predators are coming out.
Maybe there's an uprising with the cats.
Well, Sella like looked outside because she was going to sit outside on her break today because we just got like our flowers planted out there. She just saw that. So then, okay, I don't know if I should tell this. I don't really know what to do with like a carcass like that that's on her porch.
Probably.
So I pick it up with a shovel.
Uh-huh.
And my neighbor, though, had just got back from a run. And he's like, hey, man. And I have the bunny on a shovel.
Jeez.
And I was honestly, I was just going to throw it in the street. Let like birds just eat it.
Circle of life.
Yeah, so then I just kind of threw it into the cornfield. Because there's a lot of hawks and like crows out there.
Cornfield's not a bad option.
That. Yeah.
I'm more just like grab a grocery bag.
What would you
bag.
Have done? I'm not throwing that in my garbage to have it smell up.
What are you talking about?
What are you going to do with it?
Pick it up with a garbage bag
okay.
or something and just throw it in the garbage.
I'm not putting that in my garbage can.
What are you talking about?
I'll put raw chicken in there, okay? And that'll smell it up. I'm not putting a carcass of a bunny in my garbage can.
Since we're going down this way, and I'm sure people are dying to hear more about this.
Yeah.
We had our neighbor, a possum got hit on Fort Jesse.
Yeah,
it did. And so it got thrown into this guy's yard. So he just like mows around it for like 3 or 4 weeks. It just reeks. Doesn't do anything about it. Then all of a sudden it's gone. We're like, oh, that's nice. Like he called City of Bloomington. They picked it up. Mary's like raking out the debris behind one of the electrical boxes in the back. It's just this possum skull. So not only did he let it reek for like 3 or 4 weeks, he eventually just picks it up himself and throws it.
Or do you think an animal got it and was just eating it and took it back there? It's probably your neighbor.
Yeah, probably. He probably just like, it smells so bad.
Well, anyway, I didn't know we were going to get into either of those things today, but hockey players suck and don't know what to do with roadkill.
So emails at boyslunch1, that's Scott Vogel. If you've got any hot tips, and I know you're listening because you're mowing your yard this summer, Scott Vogel was like, he definitely picked up on the fact that I was trying to like give him a hard time and you just like walked right past it last week. Not this week, Scott. We're going in after you.
Yeah.
Scott Vogel, I know you're the saint of these saints here at Central Catholic because you have to share an office right next to Kevin Cook.
Yeah.
Scott, you're a monster.
You are a monster, Scott. All right. This brings me to my topic today about monsters. I've had an idea rumbling around in my brain for the past few weeks.
Rumbling around or rolling around?
Rumbling. Okay. It's more like a force that is coming in.
Oh, okay.
You know, it's rumbling.
Okay.
And it kind of plays off some different things we talked about and a little bit of last week. What was last week's even? I remember there was something. Was it MTD?
Yes.
Moralistic therapeutic deism. Basically the mindset that we form, our lens that we view. And I want to kind of expand this image and maybe change it a little bit. I've been thinking a lot about these themes of like light and darkness. And follow me here, auras.
Okay.
Salt rocks. No. But there is a, last week was kind of this mindset that we form without our knowing necessarily. It's all like kind of the knowledge we gain from the people we've been around. It's how we view different things that are going on. And everything that we consume is affecting us in some way. I want to use this to kind of set something up because I have been reading Lord of the Rings. Beep, 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 beep. I'm on the Two Towers. And there was a scene that I want to talk about. Are you ready for it?
I'm ready. Okay. Sorry.
There will be spoilers. This did come out about 70 years ago, so if you have not read the books yet or seen the movies,
pause it now.
It's your own fault. But in the second book, the battle is about to brew. Yeah, it's brewing. All right, you got a bunch of orcs and evil men coming. They're coming to Helm's Deep to fight, I think, some of the men of Rohan. I don't know. There's a lot of people everywhere. But anyway, Gandalf is going to try to get this king from Rohan to get his forces in this golden hall. That's where the king is, King Theoden. And he wants him and his people to come and help fight at Helm's Deep to this kind of final stand in that area to go fight them. I think it's the final stand. I haven't made it through the book yet. But when he comes upon this land, like everyone is very suspect. They're not very trustworthy. And that's just kind of a theme of the book. Like what Sauron, the evil one, has sowed everywhere is this like uneasiness from everyone. There's a lack of trust, a lack of understanding, or just like empathy and love and charity. So they get questioned like heavily to even get to go talk to the king. But they get up into his hall, which is supposed to be this great grand golden hall, and he's supposed to be this great king and a leader. But when they come in, everything is dark. He is like hunched over. He is very bitter, tired and crabby. And when he sees Gandalf and Aragorn and Legolas and all these people, he is like upset by them coming. And he has a servant named Wormtongue. You guys follow me so far?
Yeah.
Okay. And this servant's kind of like whispering to him the whole time. And basically just like sowing these lies into him that Gandalf and these people are bad and that like following them would be a bad thing. And every time they come, they just bring bad news. So he is bitter even seeing what's his face, Gandalf, because every time Gandalf comes, he's either complaining about something or needs help. Mm-hmm. I would say if we're just kind of applying that to our lives, like I think a lot of times when we are not necessarily the most charitable in a state of grace, when someone needs something or asks something of us or is calling us out on something that we've been doing that we're comfortable with, we get upset and we get on the defensive. So he does that. Basically, this servant had been put there by Saruman, who used to be like the white wizard, but has been tainted. Mm-hmm. And Wormtongue has basically just been influencing him over and over again. So he shut himself away. He covers the light that's coming in. He's not listening to any of the fraternal correction from his own people. He had his own like noble people put into jail. Basically the advice of those he should trust who have his best interests in mind, he has them thrown into jail. So he's closed into this little world. But Gandalf is a light
presence starts to speak truth, and that upsets him. So he slams his staff to the ground, and this thunder comes, and Wormtongue falls to the ground. And like, it's kind of like almost this exorcism, mm-hmm. where Gandalf actually speaks truth, opens up kind of the ceiling, I think, ish, yeah. basically, and this light comes in, almost like a St. Paul type of thing. This light like reveals what he's been doing. These scales kind of fall from his eyes. He stands, and they give him his sword, the symbol of his office, of his calling as a leader, of his vocation as a king and husband and father. And the truth and light hit him, and now he has this clarity and this trust and bravery. And he says, I'm going to actually lead the people myself. He hasn't gone out into battle in years. And like Gandalf speaking truth to him and letting light into his situation as he's been clouded by this darkness makes it so he has this kind of change of heart and goes and fights at Helm's Deep. Nice. Okay. I know that's kind of a long explanation.
A lot to dive into there.
So the images that I immediately saw, a quick one to allude to, and we can then start to build on it. In Screwtape, do you remember when the demons talk about there was a patient that they couldn't even get to because there was this cloud around him? Mm. So these demons were trying to tempt this human being, but he had like, he was impenetrable. How do I say that?
Yeah, impenetrable.
Because he had this like protection around him, and that was God's grace. It was his virtue that he lived. It's his life in connection with God. It's the saints that are supporting him, the angels, whatever. They could not get to him because he had consumed so much that was good and virtuous that he had this kind of aura around him. There's this moment when the patient finally dies at the end, another spoiler for Screwtape, when he looks at all the people in heaven, he goes, it was you all along. Like, recognize that these people were here on his journey. They were whispering these good things to him and encouraging him along the way. But my thought is that we all gather these auras of light and darkness around us. Not literally. I'm not like
right.
weird magician here. But what I really mean is our state of grace, our state of our soul. Any thoughts so far?
Yeah, I think what jumps out to me is the juxtaposition again of the lightness and the darkness, but the idea that what you alluded to earlier, when we turn inwards, when we are not in a state of grace, when we are in the midst of sin, or when we've begun to kind of convince ourselves that as we've turned inwards, this is the answer, this is the right way, we become skeptical, we begin to kind of be offended by the light or offended by the truth or skeptical. I don't know. I see that in myself, and I see that in kind of the world. This idea that, as we talked about, therapeutic
deism,
right? With this, I don't know, you could either the servant whispering into the ear or the kind of the cloud that we've put ourselves in, it can be very difficult and almost impossible sometimes to look up and to open ourselves up to the light mm-hmm. again.
And what I want to get at is like that change is a slow change. Mm-hmm. And it is through these whispers, either from our own mind, the influences around us, or like how we let those influences affect us. And kind of when I was thinking about moralistic therapeutic deism from last week, this worldview, it is not just gained overnight. It's like a slow drift in one way where we convince ourselves of certain things over and over again, and then we're giving these excuses. And that's kind of what I wanted to get at, is like the state of our soul is in this constant flux. And it's like how we slowly accumulate things. You let that one worm tongue come in. I think it was kind of cool he used that image, because that's like Wormwood is the demon in Screwtape. Mm-hmm. And then for the Harry Potter fans out there, Wormtail is the servant of Voldemort. Anyway, I'm sure that there's some kind of connection. But basically, when we start to, what was I saying?
Well, I think the king is, you talked about the slow process, right?
Yeah.
And how we're formed by these worldviews and by what we're taking in, what we're listening to, right? While we don't have like this maybe creepy servant that's whispering in our ear, what we are significantly influenced by that which we intake. And this change becomes, for good and for worse, can be unnoticeable. Mm-hmm. It goes unnoticed, right? And it's such a slow process that I'm sure this king sits here in the darkness and thinks this is what life is supposed to be like. This is just how it is, mm-hmm. right? And is unaware of the fact that it's an unhealthy understanding of Gandalf and who he is and what he brings, but also that this is like what he's doing is right. And this is a good that he's supposed to be. This is how a king is supposed to be serving his people, is to mm-hmm. be naturally skeptical of anything from the outside and to close himself off, right? The process is so
your own.
Right. Has so transformed himself that he is completely unaware of what he is rejecting.
It's all about he's clouded. There's right. no clarity in this. And right. when that light, even just like one little match, can light up an entire room, and it starts to bring clarity to what the room is. And you immediately want to put that light out. But this state of our soul, it really is, it has to do with our intellect, our will, and our passions. Our intellect is our ability to seek what is true. Are we able to comprehend the good and judge the good and counsel through different situations? Like, are we forming our intellect where we actually know what is good and we can counsel and understand what is good? Is our will able to choose based off of whatever intellect has illuminated for us? So more kind of practically, how do we gain this good aura of light around us? It's seeking truth with clarity and being able to choose that, right? And consent to that truth and execute and choose the best means. And our passions and our appetites actually desire these. Because I think once that king gets his sword, once the light starts to come in, he is able to then be brave because he's seeing with clarity. It's illuminated in front of him. What is my path? Even if this is my last stand, my job right now is to fight for something for my people and for other people. Mm. And I will die. I will be brave. I will die on the field with my people. I have abandoned them for so long and missed what I'm supposed to do. And I actually desire to do this now.
Yeah.
He is like seen as mighty and he finally stands up and he's this like big presence and figure because his passions are desiring this and his intellect is choosing it. You get what I'm saying.
Yeah. And I think bringing it back to the soul, right? Whenever we come out of confession or we give this great act of charity, right? You recognize the good, right? For me, if you're mired by sin and you're kind of become down on yourself and defeatist, and then you go to confession, you have this genuine confessing of sins and this grace breaks through. And then you recognize, I think the soul genuinely recognizes that this is a good, oh my gosh, this is the feeling I've been missing. Mm-hmm. But over the last few weeks or months since your last confession or years for some people, right? The idea is that we've lost the sense and understanding of the good that ought to be and has been there in the past for us because it's been marred, it's been fogged from our vision. And so it's like you said, just like the king understanding and desiring and wanting and then like, yes, this is good, I want to go forward with this. Mm-hmm. So too, when I walk out of confession or if I there's some great act of love that I make towards someone and I recognize the good in that moment, I'm like, oh gosh, I wish I had this and want this and desire to bring this forward. Same. I see the comparisons between the soul and the king here.
So how do we like attain this good state of our soul? I think I just try to come up with some examples of like what nourishes that to make this aura of light, if we want to use that image.
Yeah.
I think keeping our commitments to things
can
help reestablish what we're doing. Surrounding ourselves with what we said in that one episode on friendship with our other selves, friends who care about us and have our best interests in mind. And we have this actual camaraderie with. Yeah. We enjoy things in a healthy way and we're able to listen to correction and encouragement. If we're closed off when we have this dark thing, we're not willing to listen to that. It bothers us and makes us bitter. It makes us angry, jealous, all these different things. Having uplifting and inspiring leisure, like in another episode we said, experiencing the beauty around us, whether it's the physical beauty or just the aesthetic beauty of situations, of people, choosing the other over myself, the theodrama over the ego drama, keeping some type of devotion that you commit to, Liturgy of the Hours, the Rosary, Divine Mercy Chapel, Novenas, whatever it is, Lectio Divina, relationships with saints and patrons in your life, recognizing the good in your life and being gracious and having perspective, and most importantly, like having that relationship with God and constant communication. These are all things that feed and bring clarity and light to your life that then make you this presence. I guess I'll get to the bad in a second, but with the Caron book that we were just reading, when it talked about the stars, you remember that part?
Mm-hmm.
Like where we are like this presence or this light, where Christ is that one guiding star in the darkness that leads us. But we have these little stars along the way that are these people and these presences in our life that help kind of keep us on track to find that one star. So like when we are living in this way, we become this presence to the people around us. So not only is it helping us illuminate our own journey, but we're helping illuminate other people's journeys.
Beautiful.
Like what would be bad things? Should I put you on the spot here? What are things that would like
close us in?
Close us in, turn us inward.
I mean, we've talked about sin, cutting ourselves off from, that grace in our lives. But I don't know, everything that is self-seeking, right? Anything that is selfish by nature, prideful, those types of things that, I don't know, I think this Tolkien does a phenomenal job here describing how he is closed in and embrace this darkness. We become that thing where we just continue to fold in on ourselves and seek self over others, to prioritize our own will over God's will. I mean, just in opposition of all those things, practical things that bring us clarity and light and allow us to be that light to others, those things where it's like we begin to, there's an unhealthy skepticism and exclusion of people that are seeking the truth or are pitching something that I think people become so I don't know, they almost cave in on themselves, that they've almost created this kind of cloister of darkness.
And just no vision of anything greater. It's like very temporary things that we seek.
Right. It's almost someone who's folded in that's like lashing out to try to grab these minute pleasures that bring them this joy temporarily. But what they've done is they've again lowered their eyes, and they've missed this great, not only light, but goodness by this turning outwards and giving and pouring out of self.
Yeah. A few things I wrote. Every time we convince ourselves to do something later, I'll just pray later today, or I'll do this penance later, I'll do this whatever later. When we surround ourselves with people that are attached to the world and to themselves, like, that is an influence that changes our aspect and our worldview.
Well, and yeah, the negativity, don't surround yourself with negative people, but the idea is like, take note of your conversations. What do you talk about most with people? Mm-hmm. Is it putting down? Is it is it gossip? Is it just constant negativity and complaining? Or are your conversations virtuous? Are your friendships virtuous? Yeah. You know, it's good to take, especially as you move forward.
The darkness of others can envelop you if you're not strong enough. And it's a slow process. And that's what we were kind of talking about with this worldview. It's all these slow things. When we get caught up in the echo chambers of our divisive culture, when you're just like so caught up in that, you're not able to like seek unity and love and charity. When we're sucked into like this infinite drone of streaming services, in social media, a lack of commitment to people and promises, a lot of these things slowly add to this darker aura around us. I know this is kind of a weird thing, but
I don't know. Flannery O'Connor does a phenomenal job of this, and why I love her writing so much is all these characters are people that it's, you know, frog boiling in water, whatever metaphor you want to use, this idea that they have no idea what they've become because they have surrounded themselves with like minds, or they're so consumed with their own worldview and their own self, they don't realize how they've become just awful people. And what is it that kind of breaks through is these, and she's phenomenal with these tragic but yet powerful moments of grace that just shatter someone's worldview and show them and reveal the light of what they've missed, that can be these transformative moments in life. And that's what I love about this imagery of the Tolkien is, again, I can just picture him, you know, the staff down and the light breaking
and
through.
Speaking truth.
Exactly.
Like calling it, like, this is who you are. This is what your vocation is. We need a Gandalf. That's what I was going to get to. So that's perfect. You brought that up. We need a Gandalf in our life to break through this. We are lazy and we're slowly coaxed into this position because we're so preoccupied and the world wants us to be preoccupied. We're allowing society to dictate our meaning, our purpose, and our values. We're looking to them to give it to us, but they're not giving us anything that is actually like of substance. And have you read The Great Divorce ever?
Yeah.
The first chapter, it's like, even just to get on this bus, everyone's just so preoccupied in this queue, this line, that they're not willing to even get on the bus itself, because they come up with all these excuses from their own self, from the person next to them. Mm. If we keep listening to these voices, because I think that's in the Purgatorio, right?
Yeah.
As well, for Dante, that when you're climbing the mountain of purgatory, the steepest part is right at the beginning, and it's conquering your pride. But so many people are like not convinced, right, to even start the journey itself. It takes them so long to even get to that.
And this isn't condemnation either. Like,
yes, it is.
Right. This is a great act of love. Like, this light that comes into our life, or Gandalf, this moment, this is out of love, not a condemnation of the king himself, but it is out of love, right, that they are shown who they are and who they are meant to be. Right. So, and you're absolutely right to say pride is at the center of that when we reject that, because it is like, I don't need it. Don't tell me about that. Don't speak that truth to me, right? We believe that we are better off without. When in reality, these are acts of love, not condemnation, when we're trying to bring people out into the light.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm just starting to think of the Great Divorce imagery, which is like the bus is like your path to finally get to these different stages of what purgatory, heaven-ish, if you want to call it that. But these people are just convinced they're like in this long, vast city, and they're not willing to get on this bus because like it's an infinite city, right? It's like ever expanding and everyone's isolated.
Yeah.
They're like thinking that if I just stay here and I like go somewhere and turn another street, I'll find something here. And they're so preoccupied and there's a little dark, dreary, like, isn't it just always raining there too? They're not willing to even get on this bus because they're so preoccupied and they're so convinced themselves and they turn inward.
Yeah.
They're not willing to go to anywhere light because the light's going to be shocking and it's going to be revealing to them. The problem with not telling you any of this to begin with is that like we finally get to a point where I'm like, I should probably like establish what we're trying to get earlier.
Yeah.
I guess like what would you say is the point of this? Because I just had some images that I've been rumbling with and I wanted to put them out there because in my mind they make sense, but I don't know if they necessarily made sense as we laid them out. But I guess the idea is that the themes of light and darkness in the world and how those have always been kind of images within the Christian and the Judeo-Christian mindset. I'm sure a lot of different religions, because we experience it so much in our life. Just, we understand that the darkness brings, I don't know,
turmoil to the soul. And just, I don't know, for me, it's, I see, you know, myself, at certain portions of my life, or I see some of these students that just seem to be overwhelmed by this darkness. Mm-hmm. And there are many reasons for that. But one of the things that I hate to see, and I see more often than I have in the past, maybe, is this kind of this rejection of the possibility or of good of this light, and this, mm-hmm. this unhealthy skepticism, this turning inwards, this rejection of the possibility of another way and what they're missing. And I don't know, it's so difficult to speak to the reality of the soul. But I think what does a great job of that is some of these great writers who have spoken of in such an eloquent way, this battle of darkness and light, and what's at the center of that is this battle for our souls, that I think so often we become resigned to something less than what we were made for, something that's less than human, because we've been convinced that this is what life is and where we need to be, when in reality there's a great light, Jesus Christ himself, who is going to provide for us a way that is going to lead to genuine happiness in this truth that is so good.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. Because you can like see the people, mm-hmm. like, and I think that's what I'm getting at. They're like, you can see people that are really thriving, or at least seeking something that is good, and they're being inspired by something great, because they are inspiring themselves. Like I said, they are these stars and these lights and these presences to people. But you can also just see those people that you know are just bogged down, mm-hmm. and that it was probably a long process of things that happened to them, and you just you want so badly for something to break through, like you said in Flannery's books. But there are so many that are just in the middle. I think maybe that's the appeal right now, is like, if you are kind of toggling back and forth, like, to seek what is that light and that clarity. Like, we're going to have some fuzziness in our lives, like the unknown.
Yeah.
But there's a difference between having an unknown, but like a trust in some kind of guide along the way of the unknown, and just having a completely foggy mind or a completely turned inward mind or dark mind. So I think seeking clarity and seeking some kind of something to fall back on, some kind of truth to illuminate. Yeah.
Love it.
Well, I don't know if any of that was inspiring, but it's at least,
I don't know,
King Theoden.
I don't even know if I'm pronouncing these things right.
Anyway.
We're going to get some emails.
Any shout outs? I know. Isaac, if you're listening, you can correct anything I said.
I just want to shout out Callan Schmidt, Teddy Johnson, JJ Junkie, and who else stopped in? Toby Havens stopped in and said hi. Any other seniors that are coming back in, feel free to swing by and say hi to your old junior and senior theology teacher.
Hannah Kaunick and Mikhail English.
Oh, man. Yeah. Throwback. How about that? Yeah. They're just like, we were just walking by. We're like, hey, maybe we'll pop in.
Yeah, I don't even think they know that this exists, but shout out to you guys. It's good to see you. And as always, to our family and friends and everyone who listens and follows us and supports us on Patreon.
Keep spreading the pod.
Mostly important, and it's Patreon. All right.
For the kingdom.
For the kingdom.